Welcome to this episode of Real Space Strategy. I'm your host, Christopher Stone, Senior Fellow for Space Deterrence and Warfighting at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies in Washington, D.C. Real Space Strategy exists to provide you, the listener, a reality check on U.S. space policy and strategy, while giving you insight into the processes required to achieve a credible deterrent and warfighting posture for the United States Space Force. The views expressed by the host and guests in Real Space Strategy are those of the host and guests and are not to be attributed or considered part of any government entity or private sector company. On January 27th of this year, President Trump signed an executive order directing the development and deployment of an Iron Dome for America. This system is to, quote, defend its civilians and critical infrastructure against any foreign aerial attack on the homeland. This was later specified to include ballistic, hypersonic, advanced cruise missiles, and other next-generation aerial attacks from peer, near-peer, and rogue adversaries. Of interest to us on this podcast is the inclusion of several space-based systems, including space-based interceptors, i.e. space weapons. So today we will review what this could mean for the United States and its defense posture going forward, as well as provide the counterviews that have already begun to come out of the woodwork by arms controllers. So let's take a quick look at the executive order's language itself. It's not your traditional executive order asking for a study and a 10-year plan that may or may not come to any fruition. This one expects to see a reference architecture, capabilities-based requirements, and an implementation plan all within 60 days of the executive order. This includes a missile defense review and deployment of capabilities. These capabilities are to include kinetic and non-kinetic. So this administration appears to not be wasting any time, especially with regards to several space sensor layers and the space-based interceptor weapons themselves. So as this is a space strategy podcast, let's look into some of these space-based systems articulated in the EO. The first thing to understand about them is that pretty much nothing in here is new save the interceptors. Both the hypersonic and ballistic tracking space sensor layer and the proliferated warfighter space architecture that were mentioned have been around for a few years, and some of which are starting to be deployed into space as we speak. Each of them have important pieces and work well together as this executive order intends. So let's look at each of them individually. First, the hypersonic and ballistic tracking space sensor layer, or HBTSS, is a satellite-based sensor system being developed by the Missile Defense Agency, along with the Glide Phase Interceptor, or GPI, to address hypersonic threats. The product of the 2019 Missile Defense Review for further enhancement of the U.S. National Missile Defense System, the HBTSS will provide quality intercept data to the GPI, the interceptor itself. Equipped with birth-to-death, quote-unquote, capability, the HBTSS can track potential threats from their launch until interception. The HBTSS will ultimately be integrated into the broader set of satellite constellations being developed by the Space Development Agency. The Space Development Agency system, dubbed the Proliferated Warfighter Space Architecture, or PWSA, is planned to consist of seven layers: the data tracking, transport, custody, battle management, navigation, deterrence, and support. The HBTSS from Missile Defense Agency will be part of this tracking layer, whose goal is to provide global indications, warning, tracking, and targeting of advanced missile threats, including hypersonic missile systems. It will work alongside the SDA-developed Wide Field of View satellites and its Medium Field of View, queuing data to the HBTSS, which will then provide more specific and quality targeting data, referred to as fire control data, to linked ground-based and now space-based interceptors. Fire control data, for those that may be wondering what that means, essentially just means that you target it, you track it, you tip it, you cue it, and you shoot it, and you kill it. That's the whole idea. Now, arms control folks have some fears, and I want to talk about those fears versus the reality of the situation. For sake of context, it is good for people to understand the strategic level arguments against Iron Dome America, and that there will always be naysayers. Many of these, if not most of these, are within the arms control arenas, and typically for decades the arguments have been the same. Space-based interceptors are unaffordable, ineffective, and counterproductive as a form of defense. Let me read their own words to you from a 2016 Arms Control Association paper, and then I'll provide my own thoughts. Quote on cost. To keep interceptors perpetually within reach of missile launch sites would require a constellation of hundreds, if not thousands, of interceptors orbiting Earth. The exact number would depend on the intended area coverage, global coverage, or selectively targeting a rogue state such as North Korea. Admiral Syring reminded Congress that cost has traditionally been a barrier to space-based defenses. I will mention that Syring was the Missile Defense Agency boss several years ago. Feasible solutions would depend upon aggressive incorporation of lightweight technologies, low-cost access to orbit, and selection of a mission that is bounded enough to be affordable and at the same time militarily useful. Moreover, Laura Grego of the Union of Concerned Scientists warns that enabling a space-based intercept system to intercept two missiles instead of one would require doubling the size of the entire constellation of interceptors. A 2011 report from the Institute of Defense Analysis showed costs ranging from $26 billion for a limited mission to $60 billion for a medium capability system that could perform against near-term threats to over $200 billion for a global system. A 2012 report from the National Academy of Sciences estimates that fielding a limited SBI, or space-based intercept platform, would be 10 times as expensive as alternative ground-based missile defense systems, which they also were opposed to, by the way. Continuing, additionally, investment in SBI would crowd out funding for more effective missile defense and national security missions. For example, as Tom Carrico of the Center for Strategic and International Studies has noted, the past five administrations have recognized the need for a next-generation layer of space-based sensors to supplement existing ground-based radars, but such a sensor system has yet to be deployed. Technical feasibility, this is their next excuse. To reliably intercept missiles during boost phase, interceptors have to be in low Earth orbit, about 300 kilometers from the planet's surface. This puts them in range of short and medium range missiles and other relatively cheap ground-based anti-satellite weapons. By firing inexpensive surface-to-air missiles, an adversary could trick a space-based interceptor into wasting its payload before a real attack or destroy it outright. In addition, salvo attacks with multiple intercontinental ballistic missiles could oversaturate even a global SBI constellation. These limitations led Admiral Syring to conclude that the basic feasibility of an operational SBI layer has not yet been shown in the relevant environment of space and on the compressed engagement timelines required. Essential space-based intercept technologies have been worked only sporadically over the years and consequently are not feasible to procure, deploy, or operate in the near or midterm. Again, this was 2016 when they wrote this. Last argument, strategic stability. Even if there was or were no opportunity costs and the system worked perfectly, pursuing space-based missile interception would be a profound strategic blunder. While it is true that Russia and China have delivered sophisticated anti-satellite capabilities, no country has established a weapons platform based in space. Given the reliance on U.S. military on space, this norm is of enormous benefit to Washington. Being the first to weaponize space would confer no new capability or advantage to the United States, but rather invite adversaries to develop their own space weapons. This would pose a massive threat to U.S. command-control communications and early warning capabilities. A Russian-operated space-based missile system able to hold hostage military communication and GPS satellites would be far more menacing to the United States than today's ground-based threats. To make matters worse, Richard Fontaine and former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy James Miller point out in a recent report that fielding space-based intercept systems would be more damaging to strategic stability than the medium-range missiles that provoked the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. They caution that the United States would need to consider closely whether to act to prevent such a deployment and should expect that Russia would do the same. Pursuing SBIs would be cost-effective, technically dubious, and bring an end to the benign space security environment on which the United States relies. It is time once and for all to put the idea to rest. So as a service to you on real space strategy, I would like to give you the reality of the situation. So first note what was stated in that last or second to last sentence. It will bring an end to the benign space security environment on which the U.S. relies. This is a fundamentally flawed view for several reasons. One, note the phrase space security. The term space security, as mentioned on previous episodes, per the terms the originators at Plowshares state, is that the objective of space security is environmental and not national security related. It is not about protecting national interest, critical space infrastructure, or whatever. Number two, the space operating environment is not benign and really has never been benign. But today, it's especially not even close. With China and Russia developing and deploying everything from reversible jammers, lasers, high-powered microwaves, and kinetic anti-satellite weapons, with the ability to range all U.S. targets in all orbits from LEO to GEO, this view is clearly naive at best and ignorant at worst. Their concern about satellite communication and GPS being at risk shows that they really don't know that they're already at risk and have been for at least the last 15 to 20 years. Add to this mix nuclear anti-satellite concerns from a resurgent Russia and space-to-ground threats like the Chinese fractional orbital bombardment system, and you really have a much different world, the real world, that the idealistic space environmentals assume at the Arms Control Association. Second point, cost assumptions are outdated. Given the lower cost of launch and the fact that most programs have gone to the proliferated approach that includes hundreds, if not thousands, of spacecraft that they use as an excuse to not pursue this, the idea that there is some cost prohibition is a non-starter in our day of reusable SpaceX rocket launches, landings, or being caught by the launch towers with launch rates of over 135 per year. And as I mentioned before, that 135 per year launch rate is the amount that the entire shuttle program of 30 years took to fly. We did that in 1 year, multiple times a month on both coasts. So most of the programs mentioned in this executive order are current programs of records, and frankly, the space-based interceptors themselves could be launched en masse using technology already developed and in many cases tested. What option the DoD chooses remains to be seen, but I think cost is not the same boogeyman that it used to be. Third, technical feasibility, same view as cost. Much of the capabilities in Iron Dome America are things either being launched now or soon to be launched. The weapons themselves and the command and control system are still a work in progress, but it's still a work in progress. It's being worked now. The time to arm up is now, and it appears that the president is not wasting any time. Fourth, the strategic stability argument. It goes back to what was said in the false notion of a benign space environment. The same is said with the strategic stability argument as well. It's a falsehood. Worrying about a security dilemma, and if we will provoke an adversary from building a similar capability when they are already building anti-satellite weapons, have deployed them, and other space weapon systems, and we have not really responded to over time, is to surrender a high ground to the enemy. As the executive order rightly says, our job is to provide for the common defense, and that means do whatever we can to defend against the growing threats from Chinese and Russian nuclear weapons buildups, space weapons buildups and deployments, and other long-range strike capabilities meant to hurt our citizens and critical infrastructure at home and abroad in crisis or conflict. So I think this is important for us to keep in mind as we look toward the news reports coming out of the White House and the Congress in the coming weeks and months as Iron Dome America begins its push forward. More will come out, and when it does, we will cover it here. Stay tuned into Real Space Strategy for more commentary. But for now, this is Christopher Stone. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to NIDS Knowledge, Real Space Strategy. The Real Space Strategy Edition is produced under NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, NIDS. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent on donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I want to thank our producer, Kimberly Sherrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative NIDS Knowledge.